blanket and some sunblock. It's time for lying on the beach on camera. Lois and Steve.
Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach on Camera. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And our engineer is
David Yevis.
Nicely done, David. And our guest today is really amazing. Talk about creative and really bringing a new voice into the world is David Chesky. He's an American pianist, composer, producer, arranger, and co-founder of Chesky Records and co-founder and CEO of HD Tracks. David has written jazz tunes, operas, ballet, even a rap symphony. He's been nominated for a Grammy Award. We're talking to David today because he composed an opera for children that teaches about the absurdity of war, the acceptance of cultural diversity, while exposing young listeners to classical music. David's opera is called The Mice War, and David turned The Mice War into an animated movie and a soon-to-be-produced children's book. And let's take a look at the trailer to that movie. Take a look at it.
Can one little mouse named Albert stop a bunch of mice from going to war over the color of cheese?
What we need is a war.
A war? We're going to war. We're going to war. We're gonna punch them in the nose.
The lives of our young mice. We should think if there's another way to resolve this problem.
We are all upset that we have to leave school to go to war. Shifts and sing our songs and make the red mice run. Pong, pong, ding. Ding, 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 ding. We need to win this red mice war or Khan will not be pleased.
Very nice. That was terrific. David, welcome to Lying on the Beach. And I have to ask, what was the inspiration? Why the Mice War? What crossed your mind that you felt you had to produce the music and then this story?
Well, this was during the Iraq War and my kids were little. And I just said to myself, you know, no matter what we've done, we cannot fix this problem with war. And I think it has to start really young. And I wanted to do something for little kids to so they can understand in their own mind and hearts the absurdity of war. And perhaps when that generation grows up, we wouldn't have these problems. So that was the catalyst to do this. Just kind of fed up with the whole thing, saying nothing we've done has kind of worked. Let's try something new.
And what I liked about it is I remember Peter and the Wolf, which was Tchaikovsky, and it was this, you know, classical music, and it was a way to learn about classical music. It, you know, so much stuff that caters to kids is all kind of like that kind of music that's very kid-like music. You have very sophisticated symphonic sounds behind this project. Is that part of the lesson, or is that just what you like to work in, or why that very sophisticated highbrow sound for a children's film and music?
Well, you know something, because kids are more open to it probably than adults. Kids have a fertile imagination. They have this whole palette of things in their head and they're open to it. For them to hear it, it's simple and they get it, you know, and they like it. And we don't have to really pander and make things really simplistic for kids like that.
So if when it becomes a book, why are children interested in that particular topic? I know that, you know, we have a very emotional feeling about why this book should be made, but for somebody that is selling it, why should it sell well?
Because, you know, when we did this around the world, first of all, this was also done in Europe, in Poland, in Asia, in Taiwan. When we did this, the opera companies and theaters put a little book together when the kids went to see it. And the interesting thing is kids would come and they would go home with their parents and they would discuss it. And it's something that kids could discuss with their parents at a dinner table and saying, you know, why is this, what's going on? And the parents can engage. And it became a nice vehicle for the families to get together and discuss this in a way that kids could understand it.
So what years was that?
When this...
When the opera appeared.
Oh, I mean, it's going on last year. It's been playing ever since I wrote it. I forgot when I did it, but it goes on every year somewhere.
Yeah. So do you think it resonates here in the States as well? And is this like the great time for it, for what's been going on?
I think it's a universal resonance. I mean, this is something we need to fix. And if we can fix it in any way, it's worth it. If one kid watches the Mice War and that kid grows up to be the president, maybe that Mice War movie will be the same thing, saying, look, we're not in such a rush to hit a button and send troops somewhere. Let's sit down and talk. The whole point of the story is to show it's just crazy to, get people killed for these abstract reasons.
So could this kind of be like Harry Potter, where it appeals to both children and adults?
I think so. It's really written for families. It's written for parents to read and watch with their kids and vice versa. And they all can get together and discuss it. And also in some schools where they show this in Europe, they would have discussions in a class about it. The teacher would discuss it and the kids would get involved.
I'm surprised, because you have this music background and now you have this animated movie version of it, to go almost seems like backwards to go to make a book. What was the motivation for doing that? I mean, I see a book turning into a movie, but the movie and the opera turning into a book, which of course has no music to it. Why go in that direction?
Because the world I work in is music. So I was sitting on the beach in one day and said, this idea came to head, took out my pencil and I started writing songs and music and the whole idea. So since I work in the world of theater and music and opera, that was just the natural vehicle for me. So we can do it now, we can morph it into, then it became animated, we can make a book, who knows what can happen, with this. But that's, how I work, because I see the world in music.
Where do you do most of your creativity?
Right at this desk. Right
really?
Here is where I work, yes.
So what I is, opened, tell us about that room. What is that room?
It's just my little den in New York City with my window open to Columbus here. And you know what? New York, the sounds of the city is what stimulates me. Most of my symphonic work reflects New York City. I like it, I like the energy, and I write about it. I don't live on some quiet lake in Finland looking at the snowflakes and the pine trees. I live in a city where the metaphor is, yo, get out of my face. You're on the subway. And I like my music to have energy and reflect this, because I believe in art. Art has to reflect time and culture. And I live in New York City, and it's a fascinating place, and it has its own energy. It's sort of like when you go to the airport and you get on those conveyor belts that help you get through the terminal. Well, you're walking slow, but the whole belt is moving faster than anywhere else. So New York, it takes about a day or two to get back into speed when you come back. But when you're in it, there's just this energy that is good for me as a catalyst.
So when you work, you're never like in bed writing, or you're not on the toilet writing, or you're not on a plane or in a car. It's always at that desk?
Always here, or the piano. Yeah, I have a piano. I get eyes there, but I like to sit at the desk and stare at the wall, and you get, ideas being bored. I have a great blank wall right there.
And Lois just revealed to you her work ethic, that she's usually on the toilet or in bed working. So I think it's important to point that out. We've learned a little bit about the insight.
All of my inspirations have been in a shower or in my bed with nobody else in it.
Good to know. So David, after the book, are we going to be looking at the Mice War, the musical on Broadway? I mean, is that a direction this might go?
Who knows anything? Life is so crazy. It's like you take a bowl and you throw it up and you never know what's going to happen. Something, if you would have told me that I would have written an opera for children, I would have said not likely. But you get into that mood, so you never know.
Well, the clip we saw is the animation is amazing. I mean, it's really has a very interesting, very sophisticated look to it. So how did you find the animators that, had that style? I mean, it doesn't look like anything else I've really seen in animation. How did you find those people to make it look that way?
Well, it's funny. I used to be the composer in residence with the National Symphony in Taiwan, the Philharmonic there. And actually, we did a Peter and the Wolf there. And these guys, these young guys, animated it. And we just kind of hit it off. And I said, you know, I have this idea because, you know, I was actually doing my kids' opera at the Cultural Center in Taiwan at the concert hall. And, you know, they were doing the Peter and the Wolf. So we met, and that's just kind of how it happened. It was, you know, just chance.
That's how the best things happen, very randomly like that. That's amazing. And I do think they have real talent. That animation has a very unique, kind of a timeless style to it that I think really bodes well for the music and for the story.
So the I wanted to get on to some of the other things you do, David, but do you think that the kids today are different than when you were growing up or I was growing up? I mean, I know that you said they're more open to different types of music, so that's great, but their mindset about the world, how does it differ with your experience from when you were growing up? I mean,
no, that's a good question, and I have it. First of all, they have the wheel. When I grew up, we didn't have a wheel yet. It was way back in the day before we invented wheels. But anyway, but seriously, I will tell you the difference. When I grew up, the world was filled with words, okay? Today, it's an image world. We get everything from a little phone and we look at images all day on a computer screen or a phone. And back when I grew up, we didn't have that. We had a record player. When everybody would sit down and listen to music as a collective, we would read books. I also think, you know, I'm not even gonna judge whether it's bad or good. It's just different. It's where society and technology has taken us. It's gonna be an interesting time, but yes, most people get their information in tiny visual little bits like that, 5 or 6 second bits. And when we grew up, it wasn't even like that. And you know, if you watch a movie today, within 1 minute, you'll see like 30 or 40 edits. You know, when we grew up, you watch a movie, it was like a play. The camera would sit there for a few minutes and it was a different thing, even television. So it is different how people, young kids consume information. And that is why I wanted to do this as an animated film, because I thought it would reach a wider audience. The idea of the Mice War is to really be the catalyst for some movement for young children, for a peace movement in a better world. So you could reach more in a visual medium.
So how do you translate with what you just said to a book where someone's got to sit and, you know, read the pages?
Well, in school, people read the pages. There's also nice drawings, the animations, we can pull them out. And we have it in a book and kids can read about it. And you know, it could also be done for different ages. Little kids like 4 or 5 can have less words and so on and so on. But I believe it's the message, it's the most important thing. The message can transcend all mediums, whether it's music, theater, a book, or a movie. The most important thing is to get this message out that it's time to really reconsider how we deal with problems in the world, and we don't need to be in such a rush to get out there to push buttons to start wars.
David, if one of our viewers want to see the movie in its full rather than just a little trailer we're providing now, is it available on Netflix or someplace where they can stream it or not at this point, or how
not
can they see
it? At this point, we just kind of finished it and we finished it earlier, but we went and recut it, so it's not out yet. So we're trying to shop it for a deal now.
Well, it's not out for public, but it's out for B2B business.
Oh yes, yes, I have.
It's a done animation. I didn't show it to anyone.
Yeah, but it's finished, but we haven't put it out yet, you know, to the public.
How long does it run when it's the total opera? How long is it?
Well, as an opera piece, it runs about 1 hour 15. I think the movie's 1.5 hours, 1 hour 35. But that depends on the local people. Directors in opera, once they get an opera, they decide what's going to happen. I have really no say. They go, they get it, and they say, you know, we're going to make this longer. We're going to cut a song here. That's the way they do it. And this exists not only in kids' opera, it exists at La Scala and the Met. Directors take, you know, Mozart and things like that and do whatever they want.
Let's get them to that.
So, David, part of this interview, I wanted to show a clip, and our David, the engineer, will put it in, of what you put on Facebook all the time. I'm bored out of my mind. And David does a performance. And Steve, you've seen it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think we have the clip right now. So let's watch a little bit of David bored and playing the piano. Roll it, David.
I wanted to ask David what made him do it, because you know we weren't that close at the time, and I would watch him do this and I'm like, my imagination went wild, just the way I think the mice war is going to bring up a lot of things that people think about and they don't necessarily talk about, you know, on an everyday basis. But his concerts that he did on Facebook, I don't know what you call them. I'm not a music person. So David, you'll say in a minute, but what made you do it? And what do you call these things? Because they were mesmerizing during a pandemic to see him take a tune and reimagine it in a way that just spoke volumes to everyone that was watching.
Well, you know, my background is also a jazz pianist. And, you know, when you're bored, boredom is a catalyst for creativity. So I'm sitting there, I have nothing to do. And I started off doing like a silly song. I said, let me take, you know, Three Blind Mice or something like, or Row, Row, Row Your Boat and make it crazy. And I take it and make symphonic variations. I make it atonal. I do it in the style of Stravinsky. I could do it in Bach. You know, I do all these crazy things, or I take Bach and I do it in the style of Brazilian. But it's just to... have a good time. You know, everybody's sitting here. You know, I live across the street from the Met. Nobody's working. And, you know, we just got to keep busy and adapt. So that's my little stage now. I mean, I used to play with my jazz group down the street at Jazz and Lincoln Center. But now it's in my living room in my, you know, shorts and t-shirts and just in my house like everybody else.
So how many live concerts do you do a year?
Oh, as a pianist, not so many, a few, you know.
And cabaret acts or?
No, I have a jazz group, Jazz in the New Harmonic, which is a very avant-garde jazz group. We play here and there. But my main thing is writing symphonic works, operas, and things like that. I mean, you know what? It's like Baskin and Robbins. It's all flavors. If I do the same thing, I'm bored, you know? I can't eat vanilla and chocolate, I need blueberry, banana, and peach ice cream. You know, I like to play with my jazz group. I have my ballets now on the web. You know, I have these ballets called the Braille Dances. It was supposed to be in the theater, but we didn't. So you know what? I picked up the phone and we called dancers all around the world in Rio, San Paulo, San Juan, New York. We're gonna do one in a week or two in Venice, Italy, to dance on the street to them. And it's kind of cool because I think it's even better than being in a theater because, you know, you're looking at a dancer on the beach of Rio de Janeiro or São Paulo. It's really cool. And if it wasn't for COVID, in a million years, I wouldn't think of this. I would just say, okay, call up a ballet company, put it on a stage, and you're in a box. But now the box is expanded for miles and miles. And in 2 weeks, we'll be in the Piazza San Marco in Venice, Italy. They'll do a thing there. So this box has just opened up because of boredom and COVID. And you know what? As Darwin says, it's not the smartest or strongest that survive, those that can adapt. And in the arts, we just have to adapt as well.
So I watched one of them and I thought it was brilliant. I think there was graffiti around it. The whole thing just was something that I loved. So who's producing these? How are these working?
Well, my wife is a Brazilian dancer. She is so, but now she's a circus wrangler with our kids, you know, trying to keep them under control.
Yeah.
So she knows all these people in the dance world, friends of hers in these ballet companies. And we just reach out and we have some really nice ones, at São Paulo Ballet, American Ballet Theater. So dancers. So she puts it together, she gets it to them, and then sometimes she edits it. But this is her pet project as well. You know.
So you actually give the work to the actors and actresses. You're not there directing, and they just develop it themselves.
Well, what we do is we talk to them and say, this is what we want. We pick a piece of music, you know, one of the dances. And this album is, it's a very Latin album because I wanted to create, you know, in classical music, most of the time, the meter is very strict. It's a European form, bum, 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 da, 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 da. But I live in New York where the rhythms when you walk down the street is da, 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 ba, da, ba, da. You know, it's Latin, it's rap, it's all this kind of funk, everything. I wanted to take this language and put it into a symphonic form. So these are Latin American orchestral dances. So we discuss it with the dancers, what they want to do. We tell them, we find a place on Google Maps saying, wow, this is a really cool location. The cool thing now is you can go on anywhere. You look around a city and say, I like that location. And we say, go there. This is what we want you to do. We give them directions. Obviously, we can't go. And they are only allowed to have one camera person, and they go and do it. And these are pretty much all solos. And the ones that are duos, the people are partners married. So you can do that.
Is there any way to make money on this?
I didn't even think of that. But maybe there is. But we just did it to keep dancers going and ballet and keep it going, whatever we can.
They really are amazing. So we could find them on YouTube, right?
They're on YouTube on my page, the Braille Dances, and they're dedicated to the El Sistema in Venezuela, you know, where they have their problems. You know, no matter what the problems they had in Venezuela, political, it's collapsing, they still managed to educate young kids and teach them about classical music and jazz and instill a love for music, which is a pretty amazing thing. It just shows if there's a will, you can find a way to do things.
You are so right. And I think the Vice War is going to be a huge success. And I think, Steve, that's a wrap because I'm watching the time clock.
Absolutely.
And we only have a few more minutes.
Absolutely. And I guess when we do know where there's a place where the Mice War is streaming, Lois and I will bring it to you, or we'll have you back on, David, to talk about that. Hopefully it'll be on Netflix or Hulu or one of those big platforms. And again, thank you very much for joining us. This has been amazing. It's so great to be having a podcast with such an artist. I mean, I have Lois and David. They're artists too, but it's not the same. I don't know. So again, thank you very much. And so I'm Steve Greenberg. I'm here with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And of course, our engineer,
David Nieves.
And David Chesty. Thank you very much. And we have all been lying on the beach on camera. Take care. Bye-bye.